said that if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. And indeed, all you have to do is turn on the news or take a look at social media, and you'll find plenty to be angry about, or sad about, or worried, anxious, or fearful about. But is this any way to live? Scores of studies have shown that the stress caused by being permanently in these sorts of emotional states can lead to a wide range of health issues, both mental and physical. So surely it's better not to be angry, or sad, or worried, anxious, or fearful. But does that mean we're not taking our world and our place in it seriously enough? I'm Chris Brock, and this is Conversations on Living, a podcast about being well, doing well, and living well. This week I'm speaking to Diane Dreyer about the Tao Te Ching and her 1990 book The Tao of Inner Peace, which has just been re-released to bring it up to date with a world that seems more turbulent, more ill at ease, and more divided than ever. And the message is this: the more we can cultivate inner peace, the healthier we can become in mind, body, and spirit, the more effective we can be when we step into the world to make a difference. This is a wonderful, inspiring, and reassuring conversation. Sometimes I feel very lucky to be able to have such great conversations on this podcast, as they really enrich my experience of life, and this is just one of those conversations. If you want to find out more about Diane and her work, you can visit her website at www.dianedreher.com. That's D-R-E-H-E-R. And I really urge you to do that, to take a look at what she's offering the world, because there's so much here that we can learn about becoming more at ease with ourselves and our place in the world, and becoming more effective in showing up and doing the work we need to do to make the world a better place. The links to her website and everything else will be in the show notes as usual. Before we get into this conversation, just a quick word about Headliner. Now, Headliner is a service that I use to create audiograms, which you've probably seen. They're those social media sized clips of audio with videos that go over the top, or captions, or waveforms. And they're a great way to market your podcast if you host one. Headliner is the service I use, and I use it because it's probably the most powerful and easiest way to do it. So if that's your cup of tea, check out headliner.app. And also a quick word about Plane. Plane is a meditation game. It's an immersive video game where you have to nurture and create and grow a beautiful island landscape using the power of meditation and mindfulness. And it's a great way to learn basic meditation and relaxation techniques. So check that out. That's Plane, P-L-A-Y-N-E. And you can find that at www.plane.co. And of course, just a quick word about the podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get it. And if you want to find out more about other episodes and sign up to our monthly newsletter, then you can do that at www.conversationsonliving.com. And there's also a Facebook group if you want to carry on the conversation. And that is at Facebook, obviously. Just search for Conversations on Living. Anyway, that's enough of that. Time now for us to get into this conversation with the amazing and very fun and wise Diane Dreyer. So Diane, thank you so much for joining me today. We are here to talk about your book, The Tao of Inner Peace, or The Tao of Inner Peace. And like I mentioned before we started recording, the Tao Te Ching has always fascinated me. And I'm no expert of it, but I've heard audio recordings of it. I quote it all the time because it's very quotable. It's only 5,000 words long, isn't it? But it's provided a kind of basis for living that has resonated with people for 2,500 years. And there's a lot in there that can be useful for us in today's world, and it seems to be a turbulent world, and it's formed the basis for your book, The Tao of Inner Peace. And maybe you could give us a little bit of an introduction about maybe how you came to Taoism and the Tao Te Ching, and why you think it's so important for us in these kind of modern eras.
Okay, well, I probably started studying Eastern philosophy when I was 10 years old. My father was in the United States Air Force, and we were stationed in the Philippine Islands, which was very different from the world I'd known in the continental United States. We had this beautiful house. Our windows were made of seashells. Mango, coconut, and papaya trees grew in our yard, and my father brought back, he was a pilot, Asian art. which absolutely inspired me with its serenity. And I started painting palm trees and tropical sunsets, and then came back to the States when he was stationed in the Midwest, in Missouri. And my sixth grade classmates laughed at me when I drew a palm tree, because they said, "Diane doesn't know how to draw a tree." And I thought, yes, there are trees like that. And, you know, it's not right or wrong, east or west, either or, it's both and. And what I love about the Tao Te Ching, and obviously, you know, I was intrigued by Eastern art, Eastern philosophy, studied informally Eastern philosophy when I was in college, began meditating, ended up teaching yoga at the East-West Center for the Healing Arts, and studied the Tao Te Ching, which combines yin and yang, both and, you know, sunlight and shadow, day and night, open and closed, the cycle of the seasons. And it's an inclusive, dynamic philosophy that encourages and inspires us to follow the wisdom of nature, to realize that there are seasons in our lives and cycles of energy in our days, and helps us really honor the energy patterns within and around us. So I see the Tao Te Ching is incredibly valuable today, because a lot of people seem to have forgotten that there is yin and yang, both and, you know, that we get very polarized and self-righteous and defensive and fearful. And we can learn a lot by studying the wisdom of nature, which is, of course, what Lao Tzu did over 25 centuries ago, when his world was very confusing and falling apart. It was the Warring States period in ancient China. And so he went walking in the woods and meditated on nature and saw the wisdom in a mountain stream, realizing that water is gentle and nurturing, and yet with perseverance can cut through solid rock, and that bamboo is gentle and flexible, so much so that it bends with the wind and doesn't break. It's a model of resilience. So all of these images in the Tao Te Ching, taken from nature, really are inspirations to us, because of course we're part of nature. Sometimes we human beings forget that. We think nature is something that we can just use or maybe even use up. But the energy patterns around us are the very same as the energy patterns within us. We need to honor our energies too, and find ways of combining our energies with those around us, the natural world and the human world, to create new possibilities in our lives. So I see the Tao Te Ching is incredibly valuable today. I started, again, studying Taoism in earnest, I suppose, a few decades ago. Wrote the Tao of Inner Peace, revised it at the turn of the century, and just recently came out with a new audiobook edition of the Tao of Inner Peace to reach a new audience, because a lot of people are listening now instead of reading. So, and I see it as vital wisdom for our time.
It's very interesting. I recently studied Shinrin Yoku, which is the, I did a diploma in forest bathing. And as part of that, I learned that a forest is not just a collection of individual trees, but it's a single organism, and all the trees are connected by this kind of underground mycorrhizal fungal network, and they share nutrients and things like that. But they also share, they give off kind of hormones and all kinds of gases and things like that. And then when we step into the forest and we breathe in these chemicals and we breathe out the carbon dioxide that the trees then absorb themselves, we become part of that organism as well. And in matter of fact, if you think about scientists like James Lovelock and his Gaia principles, and he was working for NASA at the time, you know, he says the entire planet is actually a single organism. And you could even extend that out to the solar system, the galaxy, it's all one big swirling organism. And perhaps our problem as human beings is that we've kind of stepped away from that, and we've forgotten that, you know, this kind of churning, living, breathing life that we lead in our environment, we seem to think we're separate to it. And I think maybe that's where our problems come from, you know, or a lot of our problems. You know, you look at a lot of our modern diseases at the moment, and they're all lifestyle diseases. You know, they're all heavily processed foods and heavily processed information. And we're consuming a lot of kind of unnatural things that are kind of ancient bodies, which were designed millions of years ago or 100,000 years ago, aren't quite capable of digesting properly just yet. So we get depression, and we get heart disease, and we get diabetes and things like that. And doctors are increasingly prescribing, you know, get time in nature, go for a walk in the countryside, you know, that kind of thing. If you're feeling stressed out, just take a break and try mindfulness and things like that. Are we just really, you know, this is 2,000 year old wisdom. Is it, you know, something that we've known all along, but have kind of conveniently chosen to forget? And now actually we need it more than ever.
I totally agree. And maybe some of the positive psychology research is catching up with Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching and forest bathing, that what, you know, there have been studies that show that being out in nature, taking a walk in nature, is an incredibly powerful treatment for depression. Wow. And anxiety. It, you know, being out in nature calms us down. Why? Because it's part of our essential nature. And there are studies that show that in inner city neighborhoods where there is a lot of crime and, you know, corruption, when they start a community garden or even plant flowers around the, you know, the apartment buildings, the crime rate goes down and the domestic violence rate goes down because people feel better. We need nature. Nature needs us. What we breathe out, the trees breathe in, and vice versa. It's yin and yang. We're part of that larger whole. And we ignore that oneness of Tao at our own peril. And we can find ways to work with the cycles of nature, and we'll be healthier and our planet will be healthier. So that's our challenge these days.
I mean, what is the kind of underlying message of the Tao Te Ching? Is it that we need to be kinder to each other, to ourselves? Is there a kind of single secret that it's telling us, just let go? Or, you know, what is it about it that makes it so attractive to stressed out people in particularly in the West at the moment, who are looking for something to help them deal, you know, especially with these last kind of 4 or 5 years? It's been quite a stressful time for everybody. Is it?
Good question.
Is there something in there that is just deeply resonant with something we're yearning for?
I think so. I think the Tao tells us that we need to, again, depart from all the chaos, clutter, and commotion, and go out into nature, you know, to study the cycles of nature, to be inspired. There are studies that show that being in nature, can looking up at the sky at a beautiful sunset, or where I live at the giant sequoia trees, which are thousands of years old, probably, you know, when Lao Tzu was walking on the planet, they were here. Looking up at them fills us with a sense of awe. We need that. We need to feel connected to something larger than ourselves. Otherwise, we're imprisoned in our own egos, and we feel fearful, and we feel threatened by other people's egos, and we're into separation instead of unity, instead of harmony. The Tao tells us that, you know, the Tao is the one, and from the one come yin and yang, and together they form harmony. And it's, I think people are seeking to live more harmoniously. You know, we're stressed, right? Our lives are frittered away by detail, which is what Henry David Thoreau said a few years ago. Again, studying nature, very much like Lao Tzu. We need a sense of connection to something larger than ourselves. We need a source of inspiration, hope, and faith. And I think that the Tao shows different ways of finding that sense of hope. One is to study nature. Another one is to go within. The Tao says at one point, the Tao person seeks inner wisdom, lets go of excess, affirms the truth. And what's been happening to a lot of people during COVID, one of my friends says we've been under house arrest because we can't go places that we used to go to out of habit. And, you know, a lot of work is remote. We don't see our coworkers except perhaps on Zoom. So we're left with ourselves, and people have been doing a lot of reflecting lately, wondering if what they've been doing really makes sense in their lives. And I think that's a very important time of yin, reflection, going within, which our very yang Western culture has really deprived us of. We need a balance of inner and outer contemplation and action. And so the COVID pandemic has made a lot of people be, you know, in enforced yin, so that when we choose to start new things, to take action, our action can be informed by our values, by what we've been really contemplating, meditating about, what we care about, instead of just doing things because we've always done it that way. So I think this is a time of opportunity, really.
Why do you think it is that, you know, we're searching for connection, but all too often that turns into tribalism? Why do you think that rather than seeking connection with people who might be different to us, or you know, rather than, you know, you talk about yin and yang being the whole, mm-hmm. why do we seek kind of wholeness within tribes rather than wholeness within, you know, different people, you know, of a wide variety of opinions and beliefs and that sort of thing? Where is this coming from, do you think?
Oh, Chris, that's a question I can't relate to, that because I've lived all over the world and I've always been fascinated by differences. You know, the fact that we're all human beings, but we express our humanity in so many different languages and art forms and music, dance, food, you know. I find that rich and inspiring and rewarding. However, when people are stressed, they become tribal. Because our brains, when we're under stress, we don't think about, oh, isn't that interesting? We just think about threat, fight or flight, right? And we seek the familiar and we get very defensive. And I think that perhaps our Western fast-paced way of life and all the recent changes we have encountered economically, demographically, et cetera, have put people in chronic stress. So we're already here. And then anybody who is somewhat different puts us over the edge, because when we're stressed, our higher brain centers are offline in order to jump out of the way of a speeding car or a tiger chasing us in the woods. You know, it's a survival mechanism. So I think one of the things that we can do following the Tao is to recognize when we're triggered, when we're feeling stressed, listen to our bodies, and to take, you know, to seek inner wisdom, to take a deep breath, to walk out in nature, to deal with our own personal inner peace, because we have to do that so that we're not threatened by differences. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does. And it echoes around, you know, this is not just the Tao we're dealing with. This is a kind of universal wisdom, I think, that has been around for thousands of years, because you hear it in the ancient Greeks and mm-hmm. the Stoics, and, you know, there's Taoism, there's Zen as well. You know, it's just this kind of know yourself, understand what is happening in here so that it doesn't kind of poison what's going on out there, you know, because once we know that our reactions are based on fear that we're creating internally, or these inner stories that we've created, you know, that have come out of insecurity or from, mm-hmm. you know, maybe past trauma or something like that, or, you know, just it's a reaction to something that is being fed into us, you know, some news or some, you know, but it's not necessarily the truth of the situation, then we're in a much better place to deal with it, I guess.
Know thyself, the ancient Greek. Yes, exactly.
But it's very hard, isn't it, when we're so focused on the outside world, but we're constantly our attention is constantly being, you know, with their news headlines saying, look at me, this is very important. There's something terrible going on. Pay attention over here. And then we've got kind of internet clickbait and social media saying, look at this. And then you've got advertising and consumerism saying, your life would be so much better if you just lost 30 pounds and bought this t-shirt and went on this holiday and drove this car. You know, we're constantly being, you know, told to look out there rather than look in here. And then when we do get angry, we don't see that it's something that's happening inside of us. We see it as a response to a terrible world, or, you know, or a threat, or someone who's different. Yeah. You know, and we saw this with the whole you know, Black Lives Matter and versus the storming of the White House, and the real polarization of America. You know, what can we do to encourage people to take a moment and just say, hang on, what's going on with me right now?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I think we need to begin with ourselves, you know, as it is within, so it is without. And a lot of people, okay, given that most of us are stressed and that advertisers want us to be stressed and insecure, because then they can sell us their products. If we feel comfortable, we don't feel like we need to go buy a new car or, you know, a new mattress or whatever they're trying to sell us, some drug, you know, so that they keep us on edge on purpose. And the news keeps us on edge. So what can we do? We recognize that we're stressed and then take the opposite action, which is to deal with our stress by taking for a 90-second pause, taking slow, deep breaths. I interviewed Dr. Jim Doty, who wrote a wonderful book, Into the Magic Shop, about learning to meditate when he was 12 years old, growing up with an alcoholic father and a mother who was suicidally depressed and kept trying to kill herself. This was not a comfortable background. He was traumatized, but he learned to take deep breaths and to come to himself, to back to center. He's now a neurosurgeon at Stanford and a published author, a friend of the Dalai Lama's, and he founded the Center for Compassion at Stanford. And he takes 3 deep breaths whenever he's in the midst of a very stressful brain surgery and he needs to really center down. So if it works for a brain surgeon in the midst of a challenging surgery, pausing, recognizing when we're stressed, and taking 3 deep breaths, which is what, again, it's in Eastern philosophy, it's in Greek philosophy, it's in ourselves as individuals. This is something we can do. And no one really feels good when they're under chronic stress. So if we can just, you know, tell people for your own good, this will help you be healthier, because chronic stress really ruins our bodies and our brains, creates inflammation, shuts down our immune system, our digestive system. You know, we have all kinds of autoimmune disorders that come from chronic stress and depression and anxiety. So for people's individual health, what can we do as people, as individuals, to overcome chronic stress and to get back to center? When we do that, we will therefore be more harmonious with the people around us, because the inner harmony will connect us in a more harmonious way. So we've got to begin with ourselves, with self-interest, I suppose, you know.
I suppose it's like, it was Thich Nhat Hanh, wasn't he? He said, your life has to be the message. You know, it's like, you can't keep waiting for everyone else to kind of, you know, give you what you need to be happy and content. You have to find that first and then operate from that position. But there is that phrase that they say, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention. So there can be a bit of stigma attached to being calm and being happy, that you're not taking things seriously enough, almost. You know, if you're not angry at the world, and even though, you know, it's not good to be angry all the time, it's bad for your health, it's bad for your, you know, at least all kinds of complications.
Yeah.
But when people are happy, often there's a guilt attached to that. You know, there's like, you know, there's a bit of a stigma, and you know, it's like, I'm working on my inner calm and my happiness, but maybe I should be a little bit more tense, a bit more uptight. Everyone around me is angry. Everyone around me is divided. Maybe I need to be a bit more like that because I feel guilty about being happy and calm.
Yeah.
And at peace.
You're absolutely right. There are a lot of people. I mean, that's for well-meaning, conscientious people. And there's, you know, all these problems out there. For us to just sort of sit on our meditation cushion all day is not helpful. However, that question was asked where I used to teach at Santa Clara University when Jon Kabat-Zinn was giving a talk. And a student stood up and said, "Don't you think it's somewhat self-indulgent to take time to meditate every day when there's so much suffering in the world?" And I thought, oh, this is going to be good. Jon Kabat-Zinn took a deep breath and said, "When I go to the symphony, before the musicians start playing, they always stop to tune their instrument. And my daily meditation is a way for me to tune my instrument so I can be more effective when I go out to try to make a positive difference in the world." So yeah, it's either or, it's both and.
That's wonderful. It reminds me of a story of one of the early American presidents, and I can't remember which one it was, but he said, "If you gave me an axe and asked me to chop down a tree, I would spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe and then the last hour chopping down the tree." And it reminds me of that a little bit. You know, it's that preparation for being effective and almost like taking the three breaths, you know, the neurosurgeon taking the three breaths. It's like he's taking the time here to make sure he doesn't make a mistake later or doesn't go into his next task ill-equipped or, you know, in the wrong state of mind or whatever it might be.
Our brains work better when we're present, when we're centered, and when we're reactive. There's nothing wrong with anger or fear or any emotion. These are natural. But to get stuck in anger or fear, chronic stress, it shuts down our higher brain functions. And with our complex problems today, we need our higher brain functions to be working.
Well, the Dalai Lama famously said, I think it was something like, if you could teach every child to meditate, you would eradicate violence in a generation, you know.
Yeah.
And that seems like a pretty good cause. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't, you know, we're teaching people about history. We're teaching people about, you know, algebra. Why can't we teach people to, you know, manage their emotions a little bit better and, you know, find that time to pause and sharpen the saw and just, you know, prepare themselves a little bit better and take ownership of their state?
Wow. Beautiful question. I think because the people who are running schools are into the cognitive, you know, and they think it's a waste of time to deal with these soft skills. However, as a tenured professor for the last few years, teaching at Santa Clara, whether in person or most recently on Zoom, I began each one of my classes with a few moments of guided meditation so that we could all center down and be present. Because studies have shown that students get better grades because they can learn better, because they're present when they're, you know, after they've meditated. And a lot of my students have continued to meditate. So it's a kind of subversive thing that we can do, you know, wherever we are, at a business meeting, perhaps. I mean, people are going to, I live in California, so we can do these things. But before a meeting, you know, let's take a few moments. We've all come rushing in with traffic to just center down, take a deep breath, and, you know, and just relax. And then, you know, it only takes a few minutes, but it's like sharpening the saw. Everything works better after that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, how much better would governments work, organizations, you know, there'd be so much more focus and clarity and less, you know, what's the word? Less conflict, you know, if we could just sit down and have a conversation without letting all these kind of emotions that we arrived with, you know, rule the day, if you like.
Yeah. Instead of being defensive when somebody mentions something that I haven't thought of or that, you know, something different, I think, oh, that's interesting. Could you tell me more about that? And we could look for common ground. In the Tao of Inner Peace, near the end, I talk about Taoist conflict resolution, which means first step is to get centered, obviously, because when we're reactive and stressed out, we can't hear, we can't listen, we can't think clearly. So to do that first, and then to go within and ask ourselves, what do I need? What do I really need from this situation? Then meet with the other person in a non-threatening, neutral territory and ask that person what he or she needs. And then share and look for shared needs, some common ground that you can both agree on. And then take one step on that common ground forward. The Tao says the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. And I decided I would practice this recently with a woman whose politics are totally the opposite of mine. So it was before COVID lockdown and we were working out at the gym and she was complaining about the government and, you know, very stridently. And I could tell that she didn't vote for the same people that I did. So I said, oh, and I just decided I would listen and I would practice this. So I centered down, took a deep breath and listened. And I finally found one thing we could agree on. She was complaining about the price of prescription drugs, which in my country, you know,
yep.
They're very high. Okay. And I said, you're right. And she looked at me and I said, what can we do about it? So we went to a town hall meeting of our local congressional representative. And both of us said, we're concerned about this. And then we went back to the gym and we said, hey, wasn't that good? We managed to, well, within a couple of weeks, the congressional representative had, who was the chair of a health committee in Congress, had actually proposed a new bill to study and to reform the prices of prescription drugs. And she announced that at her forum. So my new friend and I, red and blue, you know, working together, high-fived each other and realized that together, you know, we made a difference just by a couple of little steps. And it was actually energizing and fun to find common ground and to start taking steps together. And I miss her because the gym has been closed because of COVID and we have remote, you know, we have Zoom yoga classes, but it's not the same. I really, you know, to try that, to just, you know, center down, take a deep breath. What do I need? What does this person need? Where is our common ground? And what steps can we take together? Just pick one step. And that's so energizing. It's creating a bridge instead of a wall between two opposite points of view.
It's fascinating. I had a conversation with Jeff Krasnow. I don't know if you know him. He's an author and founder of the Wanderlust Festival and various other kind of spiritual initiatives, if you like, lots of yoga, lots of meditation and that kind of thing. And he's a very erudite and intelligent man. And he also quite a lefty like me. And but he opened it. He gave his phone number out and he said, you know, I'm of this kind of political persuasion, but I want to hear from people of the opposite political persuasion. And let's just have a conversation. And when he just sat back and just let people talk. And he said that deep down inside everyone, it was the same yearning to be heard, yearning to have your needs met, yearning to, you know, just have, you know, just to be taken seriously and to be acknowledged and all of this kind of thing. And, you know, this manifests in different things, different opinions, different conflicts. But deep down within each of us, there is this kind of desire to be seen and heard and recognized and, you know, taken seriously, perhaps. And it's quite powerful, but we don't, when we're bumping heads all the time, we don't get to that. And maybe that's not just in our relationship with other people, but maybe that's what we're struggling with in our relationship with our jobs, our relationship with ourselves. You know, maybe we're just needing to sit down and just listen to what is actually going on and stop trying to fight it all the time.
Yeah, and fighting it comes from fight or flight. It comes from chronic stress.
Yeah.
So step one is, you know, noticing when we're stressed, know thyself and take some deep breaths or go for a walk in nature or, you know, 5-minute meditation, whatever works, given where we are. Sometimes in the middle of a committee meeting, we can't just say, excuse me, I've got to go do yoga now, I'm stressed. But we can say a mantra, a spiritual word or phrase. There have been studies in San Diego at the VA, the Veterans Center down there, and they asked people to choose a spiritual word or phrase that was meaningful for them from whatever spiritual tradition they were in. And they practiced saying it when they were, you know, doing the dishes or standing in line or something, so that it was part of who they were. And then they could say it whenever they felt stressed. And the stress of the people, the hospital workers, because working in hospitals is very stressful, their stress level went way down. And it also reduced the stress level of veterans who had PTSD. It reduced the incidence of PTSD because they had this non-toxic, portable, simple thing that they always have with them, you know, to say this spiritual word or phrase. So I say sometimes my mantra when I'm feeling frustrated at a committee meeting, and I'm thinking, oh, here's a good opportunity. I can now say my spiritual practice. And then I feel better and I'm more centered and, you know, things work better. So there are practices that have been with us for centuries that we need spiritual practices, but they're also psychological practices. And there's a form, a branch of psychology now, positive psychology, which is very much attuned to what we can do to flourish, what we can do to live more meaningful, hopeful, healthy lives, whereas before psychology was focused only on disorders. Now we have, you know, this other. And a lot of that positive psychology goes way, way back to many spiritual traditions.
Absolutely. I mean, and wasn't the Tao initially, it was great agricultural communities who were going through very hard lives. They were dealing with these kind of very, very difficult seasons, very cold and long winters, very hot, long summers. And Taoism was a way for them to kind of be more accepting of this mm-hmm. kind of way of the season. So it was very, a way of kind of dealing with a very harsh and stressful life, you know, just.
Right. To realize that, you know, it's not always going to be this way, because the Tao talks about, you know, dynamic energy cycles that are constantly growing and changing. Change is natural, which if we're in an uncomfortable place, that's very welcome. Oh, good, change is natural, let's change. If we're in a comfortable place, we can become attached to it. The Buddhists say that attachment causes suffering. So to recognize, you know, that again, that everything is growing and changing and we're part of that. It's the wider vision that brings wisdom to people and peace of mind.
Is some amount of discomfort necessary, do you think? Some amount of suffering through attachment necessary in order for us to keep kind of moving forward and improving our situations, you know? Or is it, because there is a kind of nobility in suffering, isn't there? It's a kind of sense that, okay, we're poor and we live in a shoebox size house, but that's fine because we're at peace with that. But can the Tao help us to live a more abundant life, a more comfortable life, you know, materially as well as, you know, inwardly and spiritually?
Yeah, peace of mind for sure helps us think more creatively and become more successful at whatever it is we do. And also the Tao was written as a handbook for leaders as well as people in the agricultural world. There's a quote that says, with the best of leaders, when the work is done, the project completed, the people all say we did it ourselves. That the best leader brings out the best in people and has them all work together. Again, yin and yang, putting our energies together in a complete whole. And the psychologist Carl Rogers carried that quote in his wallet because he saw his work as a facilitator who would bring out the best in people, not diagnose them, but bring out what is within them. And that kind of leadership makes everyone more successful.
Is there a kind of sense that in order to come to this way of thinking and to begin that journey of kind of inner inquiry, if you like, whether that's with the Tao or whether that's through your book of the Tao of Inner Peace, that there needs to be some kind of painful situation or painful experience first that sends people seeking. But I mean, you've been exploring this since you were 10, so you were kind of born into it, if you like. But do you think most people come to it from a place of crisis? Or Carl Jung said that most transformations start from a position of pain or an instance of pain. Do you think
And the
that people,
Buddhists say that too,
I
life is
mean,
suffering.
do you think that that's what brings people to books like yours? They're looking for some way of easing the pain a little bit.
Yeah, I think that suffering, pain, change, challenges in our lives are wake-up calls. And we realize that, what we've been doing isn't working and we need something else. So that causes people to, if they're on the path of enlightenment, to seek spiritual guidance, or it causes them to go to therapy. Apparently, in my country, the therapists are totally overwhelmed. I mean, they've got more people coming to them than they ever had before because people are seeking new solutions. What they've been doing isn't working. They're in pain. Some people, unfortunately, seek distractions in consumerism or drugs or other addictive behaviors to escape from the pain, but to transform the pain, to transform their lives, yeah, it causes a lot of people to get on the spiritual path.
And what do you think? I mean, in the Tao, it says that which knows doesn't speak, and that which speaks doesn't know.
Yeah.
Is there a, I mean, with the work that you're doing, sharing the Tao and sharing it through your interpretation through the Tao of Inner Peace, is there a kind of like, this is the path, but it's up to you to follow it. It's I can't walk that path for you. You have to pick up the book and read it yourself. I can't sort of put it in your hand and sit, stand over you while you read it. That,
There
that's
are
a,
no gurus in Taoism.
yeah,
Okay.
I mean, but that must be very hard for in a position like yours where you're trying to share this wisdom. How do you reconcile that and get people to kind of pay attention and maybe give it a go?
Well, those who know do not speak, and those who speak do not know. I've been speaking about the Tao for a few minutes now. If I think that means what you've said, that there is no one formula that one size fits all, that the Tao encourages people to look within themselves and to look at nature. And nature offers a variety of possibilities, putting together yin and yang in very many possibilities. It offers the wisdom of the seasons that you've referred to. And also, different plants have different times of blossoming. My garden now, the daffodils are blooming, which is beautiful. And in the fall, the chrysanthemums bloom. And in some parts of our country, nothing blooms because it's, snowing and it's dormant. I live in Northern California. But there is a cycle of possibilities, and each individual is unique. A daffodil is different from a chrysanthemum, and a redwood tree is different from a maple tree. And a maple tree doesn't feel inferior because it's not a redwood tree. So we human beings have our own life patterns, and the Tao encourages us all to find them by looking within and by being inspired by the multiplicity of patterns in nature. So that the Tao encourages us to become who we are in potential. And that is different from all for all different people. So yes, there is no one way.
It's you've talked about yin and yang and how they, without darkness there can't be light and vice versa. How do we find faith in that? I suffer from terrible seasonal affective disorder. So in January and February, I disappear into a deep miserable funk. And even though as a kind of someone who practices mindfulness on a regular basis, I know I'm in a funk. I'm well aware of it, but I'm still there and it's miserable. And it's very hard to remember that this is going to get better soon. Mm-hmm. How can we use the Tao as a way of kind of having faith that in the dark times, things will get better? How can it give us something to hold on to?
Wow. There is a line in the Tao Te Ching, the greater way to greater light, lies through the darkness. Going ahead feels like falling back. The even path is rugged and hilly. The path ahead is the greatest power is a yielding valley. So to acknowledge the darkness is the first part. You know, the great way to greater light leads through it. To be in denial and pretend it isn't happening is just foolishness, because again, you know, we need to, but also to look for the light in that darkness. There are studies of mixed emotions now in positive psychology that, you know, we're not to deny our feelings, because repressing them just stuffs them down and they come out, you know, when we least expect them. But to acknowledge them, but also to look for moments of light, you know, moments of beauty, brief moments of beauty, which can give us hope in the darkness. It's like the other night I was feeling, I don't know, irritable. It happens. And I was taking out the garbage and I looked up and the sky was filled with stars. The winter sky is incredible out here. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I hadn't, you know, gone out to take out the garbage, which was not a very inspirational thing to do, I would never have seen the stars. And went back in the house feeling really good, because beauty inspires us. And we need beauty. We need moments of beauty, which is why forest bathing, you know, there are moments of beauty in nature everywhere. I mean, there is a great wisdom there. So to seek out moments, little moments of beauty. There's also something called micro moments of connectivity. The Tao encourages us to find harmony with those around us. What does that look like? We don't need to sit around and sing folk songs for hours with people, or only hang out with people who vote blue instead of red in my country. I'm obviously blue. But just to connect for a brief moment. And we've missed those little connections. Walking down the street, you know, seeing a neighbor, just waving. I wave at all my neighbors when I walk my dog around the neighborhood. And now they wave back. And the other day, somebody was driving a car and he waved at me. And I thought, oh yeah, that's my neighbor, you know, three streets down that I waved at before. So Barbara Fredrickson at the University of North Carolina has found that these micro moments of connectivity reduce our inflammation, make us feel happy and connected. Physiologically, psychologically, they're good for both people, because those little connections, we feel them, because ultimately we are all connected and we're recognizing that connection.
That's wonderful. And it reminded me during the pandemic, excuse me, during the pandemic, we were all locked down, and I said to a friend of mine, how do you cope? Because this is, it's pretty miserable. The world is, you know, we're all locked down. People are dying left, right, and center. And she said to me, she's a journalist. She's trained as a journalist like I was originally. And she said to me, you know, whenever there's a crisis, whenever there's something terrible happening, whether it's 9/11 or whether it's, you know, a terrorist attack or a pandemic like this, look for the helpers, because you'll always find them. You know, there are always people helping. And there's always goodness happening. And she's right, you know, it's just, you know, there's always some little moment of light, whether or not, you know, we choose to acknowledge that is a different question. But, you know, when the night's dark, the stars are bright, you know, and it's, mm-hmm. You know, that's something that really I must try harder to remember when I'm in those funks and when I'm in that kind of, you know, negative space. That's a really powerful message, I think.
Yeah, and this brings us hope, you know, and it doesn't take much. Just a little bit of light or a micro moment of connectivity can make a difference, can make us feel more balanced.
If you could share one message from your book, The Tao of Inner Peace, that you would hope that would encourage people to read it, you know, explore it further, what do you think it would be? What do you think is the kind of the reason that someone would want to pick it up in the first place?
I think there are there's so much in the Tao Te Ching that I've tried to distill in my book. And it's obviously those who know do not speak. But anyway, I think that the Tao Te Ching and my book describing the Tao gives us a path of hope. And we need hope more than ever these days. We need new possibilities. What we've been doing does not work. It has led us to a very dark and divided world where people are, it's like Matthew Arnold's poem, you know, we are here as on a darkling plain where ignorant armies clash by night. That's what this has brought us to. And the Tao Te Ching brings us back to our original nature, to our possibilities of connection, to our ability to think and act creatively. By studying nature, by looking within ourselves and listening to our hearts, we develop our awareness, our yin wisdom, and then we can take mindful, focused action, our yang wisdom. So the Tao brings us the wisdom of yin and yang, making greater peace, creating greater peace around us by creating greater peace within us. And I think that's a message that we really need these days, which is why I am out talking about the Tao of Inner Peace and just encouraging people to try some of these simple practices.
Do you think that we turn on the news and we do see ignorant armies clashing in the night, you know? Do you think there is a kind of a backlash against that that is kind of leading to a kind of spiritual revolution, if you like, or a wider spiritual awakening as people seek an alternative?
I have heard a few people say that, the spiritual teachers in my country, you know, and that would reflect the wisdom of Tao, right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Well, for every yin, there's a yang. For darkness, there is light. Where we are now, we see that what we've been doing isn't working. And it's time for a spiritual awakening, for a new renaissance of possibilities. And what you're doing, interviewing people, bringing new insights out there, touching people's hearts and souls, that's helping awaken the light within us, which we need.
I think we do need it. We definitely need it both personally and culturally and as a planet as well. I think we're very tired right now, very, you know, grumpy, I think, very tetchy, mm-hmm. very on edge. And I think we all need to take those three breaths, like your neurosurgeon friend said, and just, you know, sharpen the saw and just get back to who we are. And, you know, the Tao offers us a way to do that, possibly. And certainly the Tao of Inner Peace is a great way to start. So thank you so much for that. If people want to find out more about you and the book, is there anywhere they can go to check it out, to find out more?
Oh, yes. I do have a website, www.dianedreher.com, and that's DianeDreher.com. And they can sign up for my Tao of Inner Peace newsletter, which comes out every season, only four times a year. So there is the winter newsletter now, talking about the light through the darkness. And then we will be in the season of spring. And I'm hoping that this darkness, this challenging time, is going to lead to a new springtime of renewal for all of us.
That would be amazing. I think we could really do with it. But thank you so much for that. I feel really like I need to explore this more and really seek out the light so that I can kind of be a bit more comfortable in the darkness sometimes. So thank you so much for that. I'm very, very, very grateful.
And thank you, Chris.
So there you go. That was the wonderful Diane Dreher. I'm so, so grateful for conversations like these because they inspire me to step forward and to keep the faith that more and better is possible. That we don't need to be stressed, angry or resentful all of the time, and that that is not a healthy way to be. And that actually we shouldn't be ashamed of being at peace and being happy because, you know, that's who we came here to be. Anyway, don't forget to check out Diane's website. That's www.dianedreher.com, and you can find this and other episodes at conversationsonliving.com. And please, please give us a rating and a review and subscribe if you like. And don't forget to spread the word between your friends, your family, loved ones, cats and dogs, whoever it might be. Hang banners off your office building if you like. Send a note, put it under your neighbour's door, just telling them to check out the podcast. I hope that has been inspiring for you as it has been for me, and until next week, have a lovely day.